This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. David Ignatius writes a column for the Washington Post about global politics, economics, diplomacy, and international affairs. He also writes spy thrillers and has just published his ninth, The Director. He'll be speaking about it at the Ivy Bookshop on Thursday, part of the Ivy's A Week of Intrigue. And he joins me on the line from his home in Washington. Welcome to Maryland Morning.
Thank you, Sheila. Good to be with you.
Who is The Director? What should we know about him?
The director is named Graham Weber. He's hired by the president to shake up the CIA. He's been a communications executive in the West, run a big company, and is notable for having refused a national security letter seeking to compel information from him, getting away with it by his legal arguments. That makes him an unlikely person to head the CIA, but that's exactly what the president in this novel decides he wants. The first day Graham Weber arrives at the CIA, he finds a place that is, as he's been warned, inhabited by the ghosts of its past. And to deal with that, he gets rid of the statue of Bill Donovan, the founder of the CIA, that sits in the front lobby, since the building was built, leaving a big mark there and a lot of employees who wonder what the heck is going on. By the end of the first week of his time as director, a hacker has walked into the American consulate in Hamburg, has presented the base chief with a list of names of CIA personnel in Germany and Switzerland, and has told her, "You've been hacked. People are inside your systems, and they're compromised." And our new director, Graham Weber, coming in from outside, hoping to be the person who turns the place upside down, reforms it, suddenly has to deal with the worst crisis an intelligence head could ever imagine, which is that the agency has been penetrated.
Yeah, the president, in hiring him, we never really meet the president in any detail, but the president tells Graham Weber that the CIA is a haunted house. What does he mean by that?
What he means is that the legendary personalities that the CIA prides, that give it its reputation for panache, persist and are really so out of step with what the agency can and should be today that they're an encumbrance. The CIA was founded by people that you have to say honestly were elitist. They were the products of America's prep schools and Ivy League universities. And they were, to a man and woman, people who loved Britain and the British tradition. And one of the themes that my book plays with is that the origins of the CIA really was created out of the heart of British intelligence. Ian Fleming, who wrote the James Bond spy novels and was also a famous British intelligence officer, actually wrote the basic organization chart for the OSS, which was the CIA's predecessor. So in this origin, the CIA, in a sense, was un-American, created by another country from its very beginnings. And that's one of the things that our director, Graham Weber, realizes in the course of this novel he's struggling against.
You go to some trouble to actually work that history into the plot with actual living footnotes. I mean, historians reading other works of history. Why was it so important to you?
I've been fascinated by this issue since the late 1980s, when I obtained a copy of a secret history of what arguably is the most interesting covert action ever run in modern times, in which British intelligence worked to push the United States into support for Britain in its darkest hours, and then finally into World War II. This operation, run by a man named William Stevenson under the code name British Security Cooperation, was described in a secret history that was written in 1945. I was given a copy. I wrote about it for the Washington Post when I first obtained it in 1988. But it stayed with me, and it led me to read a lot of documents, many of which I think have never received the attention they deserve, that show that from the beginning, Donovan, the creator of the CIA, was working intimately with the British. In a sense, he and his work were guided, directed by the British, who had such a passionate interest in getting America on their side, to the point, I described this as a covert action a moment ago, I mean, the British actually would send people out into the congressional districts of isolationists who opposed U.S. entry into the war on behalf of Britain to take them down, to plant a false information about them, to blacken their reputations. It was a utterly determined, you might say, ruthless campaign. You can understand why. Britain's life was on the line, and it did what intelligence agencies do. But that's all wrapped up in the story of how our CIA was created. And as I've tried to think, why is it that the CIA sits so uneasily with the American conscience, with our democratic traditions, with our sense of who we are? I mean, you know, year after year, decade after decade, the CIA keeps stumbling, and I've wondered, is it stumbling because from the beginning, from its very origins, it wasn't quite in step with what America is?
And do you see the CIA as sitting more uneasily in the American context than the other spy agencies, than, say, the NSA or the investigative agencies like the FBI?
We've learned so much about what the NSA does now that it would be hard to say that anybody's comfortable with the degree of its surveillance activities. But there's a way in which the technological side of spying, surveillance of communications, overhead reconnaissance, spy satellites, after all, were an American invention. That side of the intelligence business has always been easier for the United States, certainly up until the Snowden revelations. The human intelligence side, the recruiting and running of spies, basically the way in which you find and encourage people to break the laws of other countries to steal the secrets you want, I think that's been somewhat more difficult for the agency. I think one of the things that John Brennan, the current CIA director, would like to do more of is that traditional foreign intelligence collection, so that we're not just relying on these technological eyes and ears to find out about our adversaries.
That's Washington Post columnist David Ignatius here on Maryland Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his latest novel, his ninth, just published. It's called The Director. You mentioned Edward Snowden, and I've heard you call this novel post-Snowden. There's not really a Snowden character as I read it, but there are references to Edward Snowden's leaks. How far along in writing this novel were you when the Snowden story broke?
I began work on the novel at the beginning of 2012. I began going to hacker conventions and crazy places in Germany and other places to do my research. And I crafted my hacker, who is the principal protagonist other than the director.
James Morris.
Weber. His name is James Morris, and he's a very complicated person whose loyalties really do evolve and flip through the course of this story. I was finishing the first draft of the novel when Edward Snowden began his revelations. So in that sense, it is a post-Snowden novel, and I wanted to set it in the world that would exist at the time it was published. So there are references to the Snowden case by various characters, and they're looking back at Snowden and at the WikiLeaks case. But the people should understand this is fiction, imagining really that these tools that Snowden has described that the NSA has are being turned against the CIA and American intelligence. They're being used inside what intelligence agency called the air gap, their special layer of protection to go after these biggest secrets and undermine them.
So you went to a hacker convention as part of your research.
I went to a hacker convention. I mean, first of all, it seems amazing that hackers have conventions, but they do. It was in Las Vegas. You're surrounded at this convention by illustrations, demonstrations, really, of just how powerful hacking tools are. One of the fascinating things I found is that strolling the halls, and in fact, even having a booth in the exhibition area, are people from the NSA who use this as a recruiting ground. They look for the smartest, most aggressive hackers and then try to convince them, do this for your country. And I actually think one of the reasons that the NSA got so out of control, really, is that the hacker ethos, hack it, take it down, figure out a way to break it, got merged with this huge secret bureaucracy without adequate supervision. So people who just, that the fun for them is, go after something that's closed and try to break it open. In many of these NSA revelations, you can see people doing exactly that. They have slogans, nothing but net. They have, weird World of Warcraft, heroes in their logos. And I do think it's because of that fusion of the hacker culture they were trying to recruit into and the super secret, closed, inadequately supervised bureaucracy that's the NSA.
So, in the minute we have left, is the director a cautionary tale, and is that the caution?
I think there are a number of cautions. This is about how efforts to reform American intelligence can go badly wrong. It's about ways in which the tools that we create to use against others can be turned back against the United States and the danger of that. It's finally about, like all of my novels, it's about the men and women who work in U.S. intelligence. What they do, what their frustrations are, what's going wrong. I mean, this is a pretty downbeat portrait of the CIA. My sense is it's a tough place to work now, and I try to capture that, not guiltily, but I think many employees will find an accurate rendering of the place they work, often in great frustration.
David, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheila.
Washington Post columnist David Ignatius. He'll be speaking about his latest novel, The Director, at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road, Thursday evening, 7 p.m. It's part of a week of intrigue at the Ivy. On Wednesday evening, Scott Anderson is speaking about Lawrence in Arabia. And on Friday, Alan First discusses Midnight in Europe. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. It's 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WYPR, in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers, and we have production help from Brandon Block, Alexandra Kennedy, and Justina Latimer.
You can learn more about what you've heard on our show or catch something you've missed at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning.
We'll see you again Wednesday. We'll have a story about being gay in Baltimore decades ago. And MacArthur genius Liz Lerman will be here to talk about a new way to think about the Civil War. I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. We're glad you're listening. See you Wednesday.